Hi, everybody. Geraldo here. Welcome to Geraldo Rivera, the podcast. If this is your first time listening, thank you very much for tuning us in. Every week or so, I'll give you my thoughts, my opinions on the air, on the latest news. There's so much to talk about now in the age of Trump. You can have show notes if you need them. They can be found on my website, geraldo.com. Come back often. Feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Geraldo Rivera and on Facebook, Geraldo Rivera. All these links are in the show notes. Again, thanks for tuning us in. Here now the show. Hi, everybody. It's Geraldo Rivera. This is the podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. It is Friday, the 24th day of February. This is episode number 7. Something happened today at the White House that I found relatively distressing. There was a press briefing by the White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, but what happened was Mr. Spicer decided to exclude media outlets that he does not approve of or that the president is pissed off at, including those included in the exclusion with the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, CNN, and Politico. Politico is the more progressive of the political newsletters, digital newsletters that are sent out, very influential. Anyway, they were banned from this gaggle by the White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. The Associated Press chose not to attend. The AP issued a statement that said they believe the public should have as much access to the president as possible, they said in their statement. You should know that the outlets that were allowed in to hear the press secretary in this almost private briefing included Breitbart, the hard right-wing website that was the home of Steve Bannon. He was the former executive chairman of Breitbart. Now he's the chief strategist for President Donald Trump. The Washington Times, which is the conservative kind of alternative newspaper to the Washington Post, which really, I think, hates President Trump. And the One America News Network. I can't say as I'm very familiar with the One America News Network. I just know that it's not CNN, which President Trump today referred to as the Clinton News Network. Let me tell you, folks, I tweeted out after I heard about this, this selection of the media that were allowed to hear the White House press briefing, that you can't start that kind of censorship. You can't start choosing favorites. You can't start picking which media outlet is going to be favored with access and which is going to be excluded. I mean, it happens all the time in every administration. But when it becomes policy, that's when it really is distressing. When you have winners and losers in terms of access to the press secretary and by extension to the president of the United States, I think that it is lame, it is dangerous, and the media has to stand united. I remember very clearly how Fox News was kind of discriminated against in the early days of the Obama administration and how other news outlets stuck by us during our time on the outs. Now we have to do the same to the liberal news outlets that are being shafted by President Trump or by the White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. I think the rule should be, if there's a press gaggle and it's open to the media, then it should be first come, first serve, period. There shouldn't be, the Examiner is good, the New York Times is bad, Breitbart is good and CNN is bad. I think once you start that, you try to start censoring what the American people can hear. It is a very, very dangerous thing, and I don't like it. And speaking of mixed messages coming from the White House, this whole thing about immigration, you know, I think, how I feel about immigration and the rights and privileges, if any, that are to be accorded to those in this country without proper documentation. The president of the United States, as you know, has taken a very hard line. The president of the United States says that he wants everybody who's not here legally basically to leave the country or to be thrown out, captured, rounded up, and thrown out. He, the president, though, says that there's going to be prioritizing and that he's not keen on throwing out the kids, the dreamers who came in to the country at a very young age. But the president did say something that reverberated in a very negative way south of the border. The president said of his roundup, this current roundup of the undocumented going on, that it's a military operation. He said it's a military operation because they have not been allowed to come into our country. So the Secretary of State, the new Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, was in Mexico City when the president made those remarks. He was there with General John Kelly, the head of the Homeland Security Agency. So what happened was he is the president of the United States back home in America saying this is a military operation, basically saying it's going to be massive, a deportation force. It's going to sweep the nation clean of undocumented immigrants. Obviously and understandably, that caused alarm in Mexico. Why? I mean, not only are Mexicans going to get the shaft, the people who are here without proper documentation and their families who are here with proper documentation or are already citizens of the United States. But also Mexico is going to be the dumping ground for undocumented immigrants from wherever they come south of the border as long as they pass through Mexico. So here you have Mexico, not only are they going to be screwed in terms of having their own undocumented immigrants turned back, and the income that they represent to their families in Mexico. But you're going to have Mexico bearing the burden of all these people from Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, the other South American, Central American nations that are sending their families to the southern border of the United States. So Mexico was really alarmed. They are worried. They worry about the future relationship with the United States. But you have the Secretary of State down there, Tillerson, and Secretary Kelly, General John Kelly. And what was happening is that the same time President Trump was saying, we're going to have this military scale deportation effort, Secretary Tillerson and Secretary Kelly were saying, wait a second, there will be no mass deportations. That was Secretary Kelly. And Secretary Tillerson also talked about the fact that there is going to be a measured, fair approach to solving America's problem with the undocumented. So at the same time the president was throwing flames, you had his key cabinet members down in Mexico calming the roiled waters. And I think that's an indication of a couple of things. Most importantly, I think, Americans have to begin taking the president when he issues these nuclear edicts with a grain of salt. I don't mean to mix metaphors there, but you get my drift. The president is a flamethrower. He just pops it out there, mass deportations, military-style operations, almost whatever occurs to him. And these remarks were made at the Conservative Political Action Conference to a very enthusiastic and welcoming crowd. So the harder he talked about the undocumented and illegal immigration, the more rowdy and approving the crowd was at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, going on in Washington, D.C., even as we speak. So he's driven to be extreme in his rhetoric. But you have Tillerson, you have Kelly, they're kind of being the grown-ups in the room, members of the president's cabinet, handpicked by the president of the United States, cautioning Mexico in this case specifically, but the world generally, that wait a second, the United States is going to be mature about this, adult about this, fair-minded about this, measured and reasonable. It's not going to be willy-nilly. There's not going to be a deportation force. They're not going to go door-to-door knocking on people's doors and crashing in when the door doesn't open on time. It's not going to be a repeat of that awful scene of Elian Gonzalez, remember the little kid who was captured living illegally in the United States and taken from his American relatives and thrust back to Cuba. It's not going to be a repeat of that scene. I hope not anyway. But my point, and the point I want to continue to stress, is that with General Dunford, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, with General Mattis now and in the key job that he has at defense with General Kelly and the key job he has at Homeland Security, you're going to have, and McMaster, the new general coming in as National Security Advisor, you're going to have very sober, experienced, tried and tested and true, patriotic, highly competent, mature people who are going to be implementing President Trump's policies. And when he goes to one of these speeches, these rallies, these campaign-style rallies, and it sounded like a campaign speech. I don't know if you heard it, but it sounded much more like his greatest hits from the political campaign than it does his more measured and thought-out, prepared remarks as President of the United States. But the good news, and I really want to stress it, is that he does have a first-rate cabinet. I mean, they are much, much more conservative than I am, but I know quality people when I see them. And working at Fox all these years, I've learned that just because you're a conservative, or a liberal for that matter, doesn't mean you're a bad person. Speaking of liberals and Fox News, I have to really say that we all miss Alan Combs. Alan Combs, our dear colleague, for years, the counterpoint to Sean Hannity on Hannity and Combs. It was a great program. And then as Sean grew in stature and certainly could hold his own with his own program, got his own program. But Alan Combs has been one of the certainly most prominent liberal voices, not that there are so many here at Fox. I don't consider myself a liberal. I'm more of a militant moderate. But Alan, such a thoughtful, philosophical person, true to his liberal progressive ideology, but never obnoxious about it. A very measured person, an articulate, thoughtful man. We're going to miss him. It was a stunning development yesterday morning when it was the first news we heard when we got up. My wife Erica telling me Alan Combs died. I didn't even know that Alan had been sick. I saw him just several weeks ago right here at Fox. But we will miss him. And coming as it did on the heels of the death of Brenda Buttner, our other treasured, valuable colleague, lovely person with great spirit. Brenda passed away also way before her time. I think she was only 55 years old, Alan 66. It's just, we miss them both. It's a grim reminder of the mortality that we all face. But I just want to say that our two dear colleagues, and they will be missed, our condolences to their families, to Alan's wife, Jocelyn, just really lots of love to Brenda's family, the same. You know, I know how much these people will be missed by us. I can just imagine your loss. So sorry to hear that. So I just wanted to summarize my first point. My first point was that the Mexicans can take some measure of comfort in the fact that our immigration policy is going to be a lot more professionally implemented than maybe you're getting the sense from the president's kind of swashbuckling remarks about building the Great Wall and making Mexico pay for it and all the rest of it. You know, it is very interesting in watching Donald Trump in action during the campaign. It was all about Hillary Clinton, crooked Hillary. He was vicious and very effective in his attacks. He managed to muck up Bill Clinton, and he used Bill Clinton's past foibles, his affairs and so forth, to great effect to dull and blunt the impact of the Access Hollywood tape about his own misogynistic kind of past. But his speech to the Conservative Political Action Conference, the CPAC, was very reminiscent of the campaign. It was like a throwback to that campaign. More than a presidential address, his speech Friday morning to CPAC was almost as if the campaign was still going on. He was in there, you know, the biggest difference is if you just take out Hillary Clinton's name and insert the phrase news media, that's his new boogeyman. Now it's all about the lying news media, fake news. You know, it got so reminiscent of the campaign. The president would go off on the fake news media, and the crowd at CPAC would start chanting, "Lock her up, lock her up." He talked about the basket of deplorables. When was the last time you heard that? Hillary Clinton's infamous, and to her enormous disadvantage, her slander of the supporters of Donald Trump. The basket of deplorables. Throw them all in a basket of deplorables. But as he's making the speech, he's chanting away, or his crowd, the crowd is chanting away as he's doing these fist pumping lines, these inflammatory lines, lock her up, lock her up. And I think that this is dangerous. I don't like this at all. You know, I get that the president really, he relishes the adoration of a conservative crowd. And it does, as it did in Melbourne, Florida a week ago, drive him to rhetorical flourishes. I'm not sure particularly how effective they are in terms of allowing him to implement policy. And speaking of policy, if you're holding your breath for a repeal and replacement of Obamacare, I think you're going to get very blue in the face. The Republicans are finding out what the Democrats have known for the last 8 years. It's a lot easier to criticize than it is to govern. When a Republican steps up and says, not only are we going to repeal Obamacare, but we're going to replace it with XYZ, fasten your seatbelts because it's going to be a rocky ride because that proposal is going to be attacked. And you've got to look at it this way, just talking about Obamacare now. The only way that Obamacare can be replaced effectively, and that is from the Republican point of view, at less cost to the taxpayer, there's only two ways that happens. Either people pay more for benefits or people get fewer benefits. Now, for example, if you're going to give the young, healthy people who are currently mandated to buy Obamacare insurance, even though they probably or most often don't need it, if you're going to give them a break on their premiums, somebody's got to pay. Either old-timers are going to get fewer services, or old-timers, that is up until the age of 65 when you get Medicare or Medicaid, but the old-timers are going to have to be paying more. That's it. Either you have fewer benefits or you're going to pay more. Someone's got to pay for it if it's not going to be the U.S. Treasury. That's why you're seeing all this fury in the town halls. That's why you're seeing a kind of mirror image of the old Tea Party. Only it's on the left now, or the left, or even the center. You're seeing older people, say 55-year-old white folk, who voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. They're the ones going to these meetings. They're the ones that are shouting at Senator Tom Cotton, the otherwise very effective senator from Arkansas, shouting down these various congresspeople who return to their home districts, and they hold these town halls, hoping to get some love from their constituents, only to get blasted. Now you have people like Senator Marco Rubio. Where has he been? He's been invisible down in Florida. He's hiding out because none of these men or women want to face their angry constituents. Why? Because now those constituents, the same people who voted for Donald Trump, are fearful that because they voted for Donald Trump, Obamacare is going to be abolished. They're going to be disadvantaged. So you're seeing this really groundswell of left-wing and left-of-center outrage directed at the Republicans. It's obviously very early. Even though congressmen are constantly running for re-election, it's still over a year and a half before the midterms. And there is some question as to whether or not the rage will stay fresh, whether people will stay passionately engaged in politics. But as long as there are issues like Obamacare, as long as people are threatened with having a federal benefit that was once bestowed on them revoked by the same federal government, I think you may have the beginning of a movement on the left that parallels the movement 10 years ago on the right that led to tremendous Republican victories in congressional districts, in state houses. In terms of judges appointed, judges running for office, the Republicans rode that Tea Party wave to a majority in the House, the United States Senate, the White House. Now they're heading toward a majority on the Supreme Court. But if this left-wing rage is can be consistent, if it can be sustained, you're going to have quite an interesting phenomenon, an outraged populist progressive wing of the American political wing and American political life. And I think that it will be much more effective in terms of opposing President Trump and his agenda than the Democratic Party is. I think the Democratic Party essentially is non-existent right now. You have a couple of personalities who, you know, have some following, who have charisma. Elizabeth Warren comes to mind, but she's very limited in her appeal. I believe Chuck Schumer has zero appeal. The Democratic Party itself, they're going to pick maybe Congressman Keith Ellison as the director of the DNC. That's not a move that's going to be guaranteed to broaden the base of the Democratic Party. So I think they're going to be irrelevant for a while. But this populist movement on the left, it'll be interesting to see as more and more demonstrations come down the pike, as they happen in your community, as you see it in your own congressional districts, you're going to be watching, I think, either the make or break of the left in America. Either Trump breaks them completely, and you're going to have the fringe screamers and the old line Democrats still in charge, or the left will remake itself. They will reformulate what the left wing of the American public is really like, and what who speaks for the left. It's going to be a fascinating time. I'm so glad to be in this position where I can comment on this on the comings and goings of the 45th president and his policies. You know, I always come back to the point is I love Donald Trump and I wish him tremendous success. If he can follow through on some of these policies that will restart the American economy, that can reformulate some of these agreements we have with various nations to the benefit of the United States, if we can have a more fair relationship with the world, a more peaceful relationship with the world, then that inures to all of our benefits. I want him to succeed. But I also think that it's important that we have a kind of inclusive message in the United States, one that we are sober-minded, we are mindful of our unique position in the world, of our responsibilities in the world, that we are unique among nations in that we are a pluralistic land where people are welcome, where we tap into the brightest and the best minds from all around the four corners of the world. I think it's very important that we have a check and balance on the 45th president of the United States, even as it was when we had the regime of, or the administration, I should say, of Barack Obama, the 44th president of the United States. So continue to tune in right here to the podcast. Any ideas you have, let me know. Shoot them our way. You can always get in touch with me via Geraldo.com or at Fox News. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next time.